We'll call the meeting to order, and obviously we're scheduled for two times. We do have to stop by four because someone else is scheduled in this room, and we've won our room scheduling battles for the year. And of course it depends on the committee whether we need to come back at 7 again tonight, at which case we then have to stop by midnight, according to the rules. Okay. The bill that we have for consideration today is House File 1183, and I'll move. Doesn't it? And I'll move that House File 1183 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay. We've seen various iterations of this bill at several times before the group. I think we'll start with staff going through, emphasizing the changes instead of going through everything. So we'll start with Article 1, which is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and Ms. Taylor will take over from here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be working off the DE5, and I'm just going to go the differences from the articles as they were laid over last week. We heard them. So the first, in Article 1, I'll just mention that the internal numbers that related to easement monitoring accounts and some of the breakdowns by partner have been updated when they're in instances where the chair or this proposal is bigger than the original council. So just sort of a note, I'm not going to point out all those to you. And then the first changes on page 2, all the money was moved to the first year, and then dropped by $1 million, and that's for the Accelerated Wildlife Management Area Program. The next change is on the top of page 3 for the DNR's WMA's SNA and Native Prairie Bank Easement Program. It was increased by $1 million, and some was moved to the second year. On the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, on the same page, there was an increase of $1 million in the first year, and then the second year appropriation was removed. On page 4, the Minnesota Buffers for Wildlife and Water Phase 3 project, the second year appropriation was removed. The same second year appropriation was moved for the Cannon River Headwaters Habitat Complex project.
Let me just point out to members that when we say it was removed, what it means is that it was dropped down to the bottom line for appropriations then in the next year. So.
And moving on to page 5, I just want to mention the Green Corridors project was eliminated. It had been in previous versions. Then Subdivision 3, the forest section, the Young Forest Conservation Project, the second year funding had been removed. Camp Ripley Partnership, the second year funding was removed. On page 6, Northeastern Minnesota Sharp-tailed Grouse Habitat Program, the second year funding was removed. Same with the Castoni Forest Habitat Acquisitions and the Critical Shoreline Habitat Protection Program. Then moving to page 7, the Minnesota Forest for the Future of the MOPIS project. This was dropped a little bit in the first year by $555,000. And then on page 8, I just want to point out that the DNR Accelerated Forest Habitat Restoration Enhancement Project was dropped. This was for $1 million originally. On page 8, that's all for the changes there. On page 9, the Accelerated Waterfall Production Area Acquisition, there was an overall reduction of $2 million, and the second year was eliminated. On the bottom of that page, the Wild Rice Shoreland Protection Program, the second year appropriation was removed. And then on page 10, the Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetlands Enhancement, $800,000 of the second year appropriation was removed. And then moving ahead to page 14, the Metro Regional Park Wildlife Habitat Protection Restoration, $1 million was moved to the second year, and there was a reduction of $50,000 to account for the changes that were adopted previously that removed the trail work for the Theodore Worth Regional Park project. And moving to page 18, the Duluth Flood Stream Habitat Restoration Project. Some of the funds were moved into the second year, and it was overall reduced by $500,000. The Protect Aquatic Habitat from Asian Carp. There is a technical amendment that will rephrase this and get rid of the Asian carp references and make it broader for AIS. There was an additional $475,000 added to incorporate the Hubbard County, Beltrami County grants that had been a separate project. On page 19, the Environmental Learning Area Habitat Restoration, $350,000 was moved to the second year. The Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partners Grant Program, there was an overall increase of $1.14 million to the program. And then moving ahead, there was some language changes on page 23. The availability of the appropriations was updated to reflect the two-year appropriations. And then on page 26, subdivision 11 for the Conservation Corps of Minnesota, the requirement to make a written contact with the Corps and then file that with the council was removed, but there's still the requirement to give consideration to the Corps. And then that should do it for Article 1, the Clean Water Fund. There were not a lot of changes, so I'll just skip to those. The first would be in DNR, and that's on page 39. You'll notice that the $25,000 for the hard rock mining study has been removed from the DNR, and you'll see some language that replaces that later on, and I'll point that out when we get there. And then the Board of Water and Soil Resources, there was an additional appropriation added. You'll notice later on that House File 1122, the Clean Water Legacy, I'm on page 43 right now, and I'll point out what I'm talking about later. But the Board of Water and Soil Resources, there'll be an additional appropriation for the House File 1122. And the appropriation is on line 4722 through 4725. It's for $63,000 the first year and $64,000 the second year, and this is for Bowser for implementation of that language that we'll get to. The Department of Health is the same. The Met Council is the same. The university is the same, the legislature is the same, then all the big water quality certification language is the same. So that brings us to page 56, and this is the new language that's coming in from House File 1122 from Representative Purcell, establishing a new concept that the PCA has been working on, the watershed restoration and protection strategy. And section 24 establishes the definition. 25 is step, requires the agency to put these together and identifies the criteria for that. And on page 57, section 26, this requires a priority funding plan to be put together. Then there is a section that was inadvertently dropped, and which will be added with a technical amendment. And section 28 had been adopted previously by amendment. And then on page 59, section 30, this is the language that replaces the $25,000 appropriation related to the hard rock mining study. This would require the EQB to submit a report. And then there's a requirement that the city of Ortonville, when requested, provide municipal water service to a resident in a township affected by the mining if they so choose. And it is, because it's requiring a local government to do something, it would require local approval by the city of Ortonville. And then we're to Article 3. And there were some changes here. The first would be on on page 60. You'll notice that all the individual set-asides for the projects under the DNR projects have been removed, so there are no longer specific dollar amounts. And then if you go to page 62, there's some language on lines 62 through 11 through 62 through 25. And this gives the commissioner some ability to use the funds for other trails if they meet certain criteria. On the bottom of page 62, paragraph C was reworded to better state what the funding would be used for based on some DNR feedback. Paragraph D is a combination of two previous riders, but the projects listed are the same. The same with paragraph E. These were sort of reworded and combined, but the money stays the same and the purposes are the same. Paragraph G on 6327 through 6330 is a new project. This would provide $350,000 each year for veteran memorials and regional parks. And there would be grants available to regional parks statewide. Paragraph H, this is the grant program for outstate Minnesota. This was reduced $500,000 to reflect an additional project that's added later on for outstate Minnesota. Just to let you know, the numbers have not been reduced, but they'll be reduced in a technical amendment. On page 64, on 64.19, the Mesabi Trail, this was increased by $1 million, and the Redwind project that had been $1 million was removed. And then on 65.4 through 65.6, you'll see $1 million for restoration at parks and trails in the Duluth area impacted by the flood, and this accounts for the $500,000 each year reduction. Paragraph J, the Conservation Corps, the $2 million the first year and $2 million the second year requirement has been reduced, as the chair mentioned previously. And then the riders themselves, that used to be K and L, used to be incorporated within J, and now they've been sort of separated. And then the requirement to make written contact has been removed with the Conservation Corps and the Northern Bedrock Conservation Corps. And then on the bottom of page 65, there's a new paragraph M that would require the DNR to list projects in rank order and provide those recommendations for the next biennium to the legislature. And then now we're on page 66, the Met Council, and there wasn't a lot of change here. The first would be on page 68. You'll see a reduction in the Minneapolis appropriation. And this, there's some money pulled out that I'll get to later, and that accounts for the reduction. And then there was also an additional on page 69.6 through 69.7. This is for the trail work on Theodore Worth Regional Park that had been in the OHF article. And then if you go to page 71, lines 71.17 through 71.23, this provides approximately $1.8 million each year to the Met Council for acquisitions under the statutory formula that typically has appropriate, or that the money has gone towards. They would have 10% was available for acquisition funds, and this would provide the equivalent of that. And then paragraph M and N, this is similar to what we saw with the DNR. The Conservation Corps requirement to make written contact was removed, and then the riders were separated for each And then on page 72, you'll see similar language for the Met Council as the DNR. They're to submit a ranked list of priority of their projects in priority order to the legislature for the next biennium. And then the next change in the parks section would be on the bottom of page 74. The criteria for regional significance was modified a bit to provide additional flexibility. And then on page 75, subdivision 5, the recommendations, the language was clarified to make sure that it was understood that the recommendations were to the legislature. And then if the recommendations need to include a list of projects recommended by funding ranked in priority order. And you'll see that on lines 75.8 through 75.10. And then that concludes the Parks and Trails Act.
Ms. Mill.
Chair and representatives, I'm going to start with Article 4, which is Arts and Cultural Heritage. It's on page 76. The first change is that the Arts Board appropriation, the money that was previously allocated for administration and oversight of grants was deleted, and that money was distributed into each of the programs under that section, into each of those paragraphs. The next change is on page 79, and it's in the Historical Society. There had been language there to allow the Historical Society to use money that had been previously appropriated for the Civil War and Dakota Conflict Sesquicentennial, and that language was not needed. They already had the ability to use that money, so that language was removed. There is also I think it's a sort of a preference for consideration to the Conservation Corps of Minnesota, and also the Northern Bedrock Conservation Corps was added in there. The next change is going to be on page 81, and that is also related to the Historical Society, and it's we just added in the Civil War Task Force, and that's given a one-year appropriation in the first year of $25,000. And on page 82, you'll see starting here with the Department of Administration, there's a number of grants given, and previously those grants had required a 25% match. The language has now been changed so that priority is given to projects that have a 25% match, and that's non-state funds. That provision is not included for the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. And the Science Museum did maintain the required 25% match language. In that section also under administration on page 82, AMPERS did receive a $300,000 biennium increase. And the Como Park Zoo also received a funding increase to $500,000 each year. The historical memorial bust section, which is on page 85, also under the Department of Administration, now has three busts listed, the Nellie Stone Johnson, Harry Blackman, and Pierce Butler. The Minnesota Humanities Center, which is in subdivision 7 on page 85, has a $100,000 per year increase specifically in their Programs and Purposes section, and that is for the Veterans Voices Awards Program. The next change is also under the Humanities Center, and that's on page 87. It's the Southern Minnesota Children's Museum, and that appropriation dropped the funding for the second year. The next change would be subdivision 13. It's going to be on page 91. And that is a program that was added in. It is a $50,000 appropriation in the first year, to the Commissioner of Deed for a motion picture production investment incentive program that has them working with an organization to administer a motion picture investment project. The next change you're going to find is going to be on page 92, and that's the language under capital cafeteria. Previously, it had stricken the special events language that's at the end of that on page 92, line 16, and that language has been reinstated. And then the last change is going to be Article 5, and that's on page 93. Article 5 has two provisions. The first one is amending Minnesota Statute 3.9741, Subdivision 3. It's changing the language and then adding new language related to how the auditor is reimbursed through the Commissioner of Management and Budget for the cost of the audits related to legacy funds. And the second provision is it's language that directs the Commissioner of Management and Budget to equally or equitably reduce funding if there was to be a shortfall in available revenues related to legacy funds. And I think that's everything.
Okay. Are there any questions from members? Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, regarding on page 91, the section 91.9, the motion picture production investment incentives, and then on 91.11, the $50,000 implemented to the Department of Commerce or Department of Economic Development. What exactly
We need.
Someone speak on that?
We need Representative Erdahl here. Yeah. This is. Is the. You might call him the father of this amendment. Page 91, the Motion Picture Production Investment Incentive Program. Question from Representative McDonald about how and why that's going to work.
Nope. Representative McDonald?
Yeah, Representative Bruno. Not why, but how.
How is it going to work? Applications will be made through to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and those who qualify based on this criteria will be considered for a grant. Now, obviously, $50,000 is not it's basically a placeholder to consider this as we go forward. There can be other changes made to this, but at the present time, that's how it's envisioned, that there would be a amount of money, not necessarily $50,000, that would be appropriate for this, through deed to whatever organization would fit based on this criteria, or whatever organizations would fit.
Let me just say a few words also. There's some of us who are intrigued by the models that we've seen in European countries, we've seen in Canada, we've seen the provinces in Canada and so forth, of instead of the tax rebate program, which we've gone in and out of having here, I believe it's being carried in another bill, some of us are skeptical of having seen the advantages of that, and this is a new approach. Now, in order to have this work, to have a pot of money, and the principle behind it is that you've gotten everything is all assembled, the picture is going to be made, and the motion picture is going to be made in Minnesota. This is kind of like the last piece in, and an appropriation, and in terms of that also. There would be then the state would then have an investment in the picture as it went forward. You know, unfortunately, it's hard to dip your toe into this and do it in a sensible way. You'd probably need a sizable amount of money either from private sources or state sources to make this go. So this is just to continue the discussion on this and see if someone can come up with some way of getting that sizable fund of money. And it's,
thank you, Madam Chair. I couldn't have said that better myself.
Well, so if you, you know, it's an Ertl Kahn agreement, if you if you want specific names on it. So okay. Any other questions about Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We have quite a bit of new language in Section 25 on page 56 of the bill. I believe it's a Purcell bill that's been heard in other committees, yes, but not heard in our committee. I see that Representative Purcell is in the audience, and rather than make him wait until who knows when, perhaps we should bring him forward now to explain this section of the bill.
Yes, thank you. Representative Purcell, thank you. Members, this is section 24 as in 24 and 25.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Torkelson, for your kind consideration here. I know you're coming back this evening, or maybe maybe me too, eh? this bill, this part of the legacy bill, section 25, was indeed at House File 1122, if I remember the numbers correctly, and had been heard in committee and other committees. And this, I'm not going to walk all the way through the bill, through the language, unless you so desire, have specific questions on specifics, but that we're going to lay out some roadmap, if you will, some of which has been put in front of us before as legislators, for how we're going to deal with these watershed protection plans and remediation plans, restoration, the RAPs, if you will, and how we're going to achieve what we set out to achieve in a water quality setting, and then how are we going to have that accounted for, and reasonable feedback to the legislature as to what we're getting for the funds that we're putting into these watershed restoration and protection plans. And it lays out several different items in there, and if I might just direct to page 57 and up in 57.1, excuse me, that these ongoing plans will contain implementation table strategies and actions capable of cumulatively achieving needed pollution load reductions for point and non-point sources, including, and then we'll go down and you can see those listed by Roman numeral there, 1 through 9, and then some reporting in subdivision 2 down there, that we're going to get feedback July 1, 2016, every year thereafter. Pollution Control Agency is going to give us feedback on the progress toward implementation, milestones, and some timelines there, Subdivision 3, complete the RAPs within 1 year of EPA approval of a TMDL within the applicable watershed. It goes on there and talks about non-point priority funding then. So I don't know if I've done enough explaining, Representative Torkelson, but I hope I've gotten across what the intent is here of this substantive language, and that we're really trying to bring some efficiencies here into this process, and believe that we're going to accomplish that. We do also believe that MPCA has been on the right track here for the last while, several years, in developing this kind of information, this kind of plan, and that we're poised to make it a little better and get feedback to the legislature.
Okay. Yep. Representative Torkelson, any other?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You didn't talk about Section 24, but I assume that's also part of this.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
My first question deals with Section 24. On line 56.8, talk about documents summarizing scientific studies of a major watershed. How do you define the term major watershed?
I can only tell you that that's in the current, and I'm looking to see if there's MPCAs in the audience, but in the, I don't want to get into the digit codes of USGS. I don't want to misspeak on it, Representative Torkelson. I'm going to, looking for...
I think someone's coming to help you.
Okay, yeah.
Would you please identify yourself for the tape?
My name is Michael Schmidt. I'm with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. I work on water quality issues there. The major watershed refers to a HUC 8 level, hydrologic unit code level 8. So in Minnesota, there are 81 major watersheds in the state, and the Pollution Control Agency has started developing these watershed restoration and protection strategies at the major watershed, or HUC 8, or 81 watershed scale.
Now, one of the... Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think that should be specified. You know, we've dealt with a TMDL as large as the Lake Pepin watershed, which proved to be so large that we couldn't deal with it effectively. On the other hand, and I've seen the RAP presentation, I don't remember specifically, but I thought some of that effort was going to be taken down to a HUC 16. Am I incorrect on that?
As I understand it, the watershed restoration and protection strategies look at the entire HUC 8 level watershed, the major watershed scale, but for lakes and some specific impairments, they can do modeling that is more specific. But the document encompasses the whole watershed, so it looks at everything in that, but can have more specific information, especially on lakes that might have a smaller watershed within the larger HUC 8 watershed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know you don't like oral amendments, so I'm not going to make one.
No, it is something.
Well, I would suggest that we state that scientific studies of a major watershed no larger than a HUC 8 would give us the flexibility to do a HUC 8 or something smaller, but not to get to something we can't manage.
Is that acceptable?
I'd take that as friendly.
Okay. Is there anyone who has any objection to that as an amendment? Okay. Do you have the amendment? Okay.
HUC 8 is kind of slang for the correct terminology. Perhaps you know.
What's the correct?
The hydrologic unit code. That's what the HUC stands for.
Okay.
So it would be an 8-digit hydrologic unit code.
Okay.
But Madam Chair, I believe, is it U.S. Geologic Survey based?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay.
That's correct.
U.S. You know, of course, one of the nice things about the legislature is that this language doesn't have to be perfect till the last day of the last minute of the conference committee. And for the ability to have someone like Representative Torkelson contribute a needed amendment is why I don't like rules saying that you have to have them, can't have oral amendments, or you have to have them 30 days in advance or 30 hours in advance or whatever. So, okay. Everyone understand the amendment? And all those in favor of the Torkelson amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Thank any other questions, Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Purcell, on line 5722 of your part of this bill, it talks about drafts must be completed within 1 year of the Environmental Protection Agency's approval of TMDLs within the applicable watershed. Does that mean all TMDLs that are currently in action in that watershed, or is it any one of those TMDLs? You know, in some cases we have multiple TMDLs going on at the same time in the same watershed, and one might be completed, another one might not. What is the intention of this part, Bill?
Mm-hmm. I'm maybe pass this off too, but I'm assuming we're going to do one at a time, but let me see if I'm correct on that.
Mr. Schmidt?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, the way that the PCA is beginning to develop these watershed restoration and protection strategies is to look at all of the impairments and develop TMDLs for all of the impairments in the Huc 8 scale watershed. And so it would be after they submit those TMDLs, which they plan to do all at once, then they would be required to do a watershed restoration and protection strategy from that point. The way that they're doing it in practice is to do everything at once, all of the TMDLs as well as the watershed restoration protection strategy. So under their proposed approach, they would have no problem meeting this deadline.
Okay.
Well, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this is, you know, this RAPs are fairly new. I don't know if they've even done one yet, but I'm not going to suggest any changes to this language at this time, but I think it deserves some, at least some thought put into this as we move forward.
Well, we look forward to you putting thought into it. And the, but let me say, one of the things that I'm particularly enthusiastic about this is the reason that this was something that was suggested to me by one of the people who are supposedly calling for my head at every moment, the members of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Commission, who said that one of the very useful things we could do in legacy is pick a couple of, using legacy funds, pick a couple of watersheds and get really good measurements on them and put maybe a lot of effort concentrated into them, not just from this Clean Water Fund, but from all, at least all of the three environmental legacy funds, and really be able to, by good measurement and following it over the years, really be able to start to show the difference of legacy funds in creating a legacy. So I think, you know, this kind of thing is something that helps us identify watersheds that might be useful to specifically pinpoint in doing this. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You've really, in essence, described the path that the Clean Water Council has been on for a number of years already. We've decided that breaking the state down into these 81 major watersheds and then pursuing them on a cycle of 10 years, identifying, you know, the ones that we want to visit first and doing intensive monitoring on a 10-year cycle is one way to proceed. It's not a new thing.
Okay. I know, but the thing I want to add to it is I want to know that once we've picked out a couple of appropriate watersheds, I want just not Clean Water Council money and funding and effort going into it, but also the two other groups, the Outdoor Heritage Council and the Parks and Trails Council, also when appropriate. And obviously it would have to be a watershed that it was appropriate to have all three going into. But, you know, if anything we can do, if we can break down some of these barriers between how we treat environmental problems in the state, I think we'll go a long way to solving them. So this is a great start. Anyway, any other questions on this? Okay. Can we tell Representative Purcell that he doesn't have to come back again?
I think he should stick around.
Okay, your choice.
I come back, bring pizza. Huh?
Your choice, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Torkelson, for bringing him up now. Okay. The next amendment I'd like to move is the A44 amendment. And this is the technical changes. This is the expanding the definition of aquatic invasive species. These are the ones that Ms. Taylor Ms. Taylor described, incorporating the language for Hubbard and County and Beltrami County and so forth. Is there any questions about this? Representative McDonald?
Madam Chair, just a question regarding the legacy bill that we did 2 years ago regarding the invasive aquatic species. Is this will this continue to work off of that, some of the projects that already started from that, or is this
yes, and
in addition
puts,
to? Could you explain that?
No, it continues to work on that. It puts in, it's one of the places where we put a big chunk of money in the second year, and the importance of doing that and the importance of doing that is to make sure that they can get on the earliest part of the working season for outdoor resources. One of the problems that we have with passing a different and in most funds it's a biennial problem, and this fund it's an annual problem, is that, for example, even if all the work has been done during the interim, for some reason we don't ever get to pass these bills, even if we don't change anything in them, until the last week in May. So anyone who's getting the funding from it has essentially lost, by the time they get their planning and their staffing up and so forth, they've lost an entire, I guess if you were a farmer, you'd call it a growing season, you'd call it a natural resource working season. So the idea of putting some of these things out so that the second year is available right away helps that, gets rid of that problem. They can start planning now for a full 2 year cycle. So, okay.
Madam Chair, yeah, just to follow up, do we know the amount that was spent then in the last bill, or what the amount allocated for aquatic invasive species?
Okay, we have that on our spreadsheet. What? The amount spent in the last
biennium.
Biennium. 7.5 million.
And? Are we winning?
No, I said 7.5 million.
No, no.
What? Are we winning?
Yeah, we.
I don't think we're losing yet. They said that they didn't find that the DNA reports were not true. So, you know, I guess the answer is if we do nothing, we'll clearly lose. So, we hope we're winning.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not proposing we do nothing, of course.
Okay. But,
yeah, I think it would be good to see the results of spending $7 million on this aquatic, you know, the invasive species. It's a major problem, we know, but maybe I missed that meeting.
Well, there was the, I guess it's on Representative Wagenius's committee, but we went to see something that was arranged by Representative Erickson to go look at a laboratory at the university, Peter Sorensen. Representative Wagenius, you could probably say this better than I can, but there are all kinds of projects that are having effects that are doing it. Some really cute one where they get all of the carp to go into one part of a shallow lake in the winter, and then they have commercial fishermen come and take them all out and take them away and clean them and sell them and eat them, which I really thought was good. But, you know. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So this is now the 844 amendment. All those in favor of that amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. The next amendment is the Representative Torkelson's A30 amendment. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got too much paper here. There's also a spreadsheet that goes with the amendment, and it is the one that has the Clean Water Council recs, the Governor's recs, and the DE5 recs all on the same page. So those of committee members may want to try and find that as I'm trying to find my amendment. Mm-hmm.
Do you have your amendment?
Yes, I have the 30.
I guess these spreadsheets all kind of look the same. But it says Water and Soil Resources is tough. It's the shrunken one, the one that's kind of shrunken. Do you have the amendment?
I have the amendment and the spreadsheet, and I'm hoping the members of the committee also have.
I have both of them, too. So.
The A30 amendment replaces the current language in the bill with the recommendations of the Clean Water Council. In the Environment Committee, I presented the governor's recommendations, which are actually quite close to the Clean Water Council, and they were rejected by the committee. I'm going to give a shot here, this time with the Clean Water Council's recommendations. I fully understand, Madam Chair, that the legislature has the final say on how these legacy funds are spent. But we have created, and in the case of the Clean Water Council, Clean Water Council actually predates the passage of the constitutional amendment. It was established 2 years earlier. And we've, as a legislature, have created these councils. We expect them to work hard. We expect citizens from across the state to take part in the effort. In the case of the Clean Water Council, they meet monthly and put in virtually an all-day meeting, typically from 9 a.m. till 3 in the afternoon. It's a 28-member council that includes citizens that are voting members. It includes representatives from 5 state agencies, so the state agencies are all represented, although they do not vote. And it includes 4 representatives of the legislature who also do not vote on the recommendations of the council. And as I said earlier, the legislature certainly has the right to change and redo anything it wants. We have that power. But in my opinion, we are abusing that power with wholesale changes to these recommendations. If we expect citizens to serve on these councils, whether it be the Clean Water Council or others, we expect them to spend their time. In many cases, these are expert members of this council, including representatives from the University of Minnesota. We expect them to spend their time and effort to give us advice. It seems to me that we should, to the best of our ability, respect that advice. When we make wholesale changes to these recommendations, we're cutting these folks off at the knees, and the next time that we go out to recruit members for these councils, what motivation will there be for them to take part? They tend to, I would think, tend to say, well, if my recommendations and the work of my colleagues is going to be ignored, why should I bother? And that, to me, does a disservice to all of us. Citizens of Minnesota voted for these for the constitutional amendment because they wanted to make a difference. The polling I've seen showed that water was the biggest reason that they voted for the constitutional amendment, that water is what carried the day, and I believe that to be true. The bill as it stands before you, not the amendment, but the bill as it stands before you does make major changes in the distribution of the Clean Water Council funds. It increases the amount of money spent on monitoring assessment. It decreases significantly the amount of money spent on implementation. It does dramatically increase the amount of money spent on groundwater efforts, and I'm not going to try and tear those ideas apart. I think they are valid, but are they the appropriate projects for these funds? In some cases, a research fund, for instance, in my mind, would be more appropriately funded with LCCMR funds. That's been our tradition. The citizens of Minnesota want as much of this money to go on the ground as possible and to make a difference. But in the area of cleaning up water, it's not easy to demonstrate those differences. I just think of the current climatic conditions that we are experiencing. I compare this year to a year ago, and the impact on the waters of the state are dramatically different just because the weather has changed dramatically from one year to the next. It makes it really hard to track these differences. We do have some signs that we are making progress. The health of the Minnesota River has improved fairly dramatically. we have, is our work done? I would say no. We have much work yet to do. In the case of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, they have been cut $22 million. Now, I shouldn't say cut because these are legacy funds and they're meant to do new things. But the Board of Water and Soil Resources is doing new things all the time. Every project they do is a new project. I've often relayed to folks, you know, as a farmer or any citizen landowner in greater Minnesota, if you saw three or four cars driving up your driveway that wanted to convince you to do something, one was from PCA, one was from DNR, and the next was from the Department of Health, and the last one was from Bowser, I can assure you that the Bowser folks would have the best luck getting cooperation from our citizens. We've had a lot of talk here about the geographic variety of the state of Minnesota. Every part of the state is different. Each farm and each piece of property in the state is a little bit different. To do our work effectively, we need to use the resources that are closest to the land. If we focus these funds here in St. Paul and expect bureaucrats to make decisions from their offices to improve our water quality, we are only doing part of the job. Our SWCD folks and our NRCS folks are the folks that are in every county in the state. They know the land, they know the landowners, and that's where we should be spending our assets. I'm not going to cover every line item in the bill. I think most folks here know how I feel about the Ag Water Quality Certification Program as it stands in the bill. You know, when this program was rolled out by the governor and EPA and the Department of Ag from the federal government, I had great hopes because I thought it was an opportunity for our NRCS people who are federal employees and our SWCD people who are local county folks to really work together because they have not worked together effectively in the past. We have these assets out there. This program could have brought them together to do good local work. Instead, we're establishing another bureaucracy. We're hiring a bunch of employees to sit here in St. Paul. We could do things better. I've heard quotes about willy-nilly and going ahead without knowing where you are going. In the case of the Ag Water Quality Certification Program, that's exactly what's happening. I'm not going to go on all afternoon here, Madam Chair. I respect your time and the committee's time, but I have serious concerns about the bill as it's being presented, and I would urge a green vote on this amendment.
There are two people that I need to call, and I'll make two comments about it, and I'm obviously not an expert in this area. This bill did come through Representative Wagenius's committee, and I know she's done a lot of work on it, so I'll coolly, and she's on our list to speak. I'll just pick up two things that I picked up right away that are in the delete everything amendment that aren't in any of the other previous ones, and that's right at the end, the County Geological Atlas Service and the LCC public information website. And both of those are not large amounts of money when you look at the rest of it, but I think that those are two of the website is the way we can make this transparent to the public. And so I very strongly support putting additional money to work on that. There have been very good conversations between the LCC people and Minute people about making sure that we're not duplicating things and we're using the most effective, cost-efficient way of doing it. Then the other one is the county geological atlases. I know that there are parts of the state where we may have serious hydrologic problems, and the first thing we can do to get to that is get that County Geological Atlas survey in place. I think that may have even been started when I was on and when I chaired LCMR, and I think that was a very, very long time ago. So I know we're going county by county and getting, I think we've gone through several state geologists while we've done that, and I think that that's an important thing for us to move on. But I'd rather have someone more knowledgeable than me defend the substance of that bill, so I'll call on Representative Wagenius.
I don't want to forget to request a roll call, Madam.
Yeah, okay. Roll call being requested. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing up the subjects you did. I just want for the audience and members to note that this delete all not only has to do with the recommendations made by Clean Water Council, it also repeals the certainty program, or certification program, the water quality certification program that was brought to us by the Department of Agriculture on behalf of the governor, who did make an agreement with the Secretary, United States Secretary of Agriculture, Velsek. And so this amendment takes that language away. It also takes away the language that Representative Purcell just presented to us. But I'm going to concentrate a little bit more on what it doesn't fund. The Clean Water Council only had $1 million, and there's only $1 million in here for the certification program that is being repealed. We, in the bill before you, have $3 million, what is the amount that the Department of Agriculture did ask us for. And that is the amount they know they need to get the federal funds to work, and that's another $6 million. So that's one thing. But I'm going to mention a couple of other highlights. One, the Clean Water Council recommended $500,000 to work on lakes. And in the bill before you, we have $3 million each year for our lakes. And it's in the Clean Water Partnership, which is in the Pollution Control Agency. And I think when we talk about money shifting, yes, that is a Pollution Control Agency rather than a Bowser program, but it's still what people like to refer to as boots on the ground. That has been an excellent program for lake associations to first make a plan and then to have some dollars to help implement that plan. I feel very strongly that we want to continue with that Clean Water Partnership with our lakes folks. You mentioned that there was no money for the geologic atlas for the U. We are trying to get on a 10-year plan to get the job done, and this just takes us back to the old way of maybe getting it done in 25 to 30 years. This amendment takes away the money that would go to the Department of Health to check to see whether there are viruses in our drinking water. I mean, people did vote for this for drinking water, the Department of Health hasn't had the money to do that. Wisconsin has found viruses in their drinking water nationally, 30% viruses in drinking water. We need to be able to tell Minnesotans we're not just checking for bacteria, we're checking for viruses. This bill, until Representative, the Clean Water Council's bill, had no targeting for the money, actually no focus on cleanups. It's just random acts of conservation across the land. Maybe some of them are quite good, but there's no targeting, no focusing. And of course, the other thing is the Clean Water Council did not deal with the problems in the metropolitan area. And those of us who live in the metropolitan area, it's not going to affect me personally because my city uses river water for drinking water, but all of our suburban communities that are using groundwater for drinking water are using it much too fast. Both in the western suburbs, in Dakota County, in Washington County, we have real problems coming, and to ignore that just doesn't seem smart at this point, particularly since Met Council has an outstanding hydrogeologist right now who's done wonderful work and can give us some guidance. So just with that, and rather getting into more detail, which I could do, I would just ask members to vote no on this amendment.
Okay. Representative Erdl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this is certainly a very important issue. There are different ways of dealing with it, and I'm sure that Representative Torkelson's amendment does some things that Representative Wagenius in her bill was not able to do, and vice versa. Concern that I have is, as Representative Torkelson indicated, following the some of the guidelines of the councils for this, and not just in this, but in our bill as a whole. 28 members of the Clean Water Council, and Representative Torkelson, you did touch on the expertise. Could you be a little more specific about some of the expert background of some of the folks around the council?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually misplaced my copy of the council members. I've got it here in small print, and if my bifocals allow, I will do my best.
Perhaps Representative Wills can help
through it. She probably could. She's been quite helpful, actually, in a number of areas. There's a representative from the cities, both large and small. There's representatives from rural counties. Chief Executive Officer of the Ag Water Quality Program, not the one that we're talking about here today, but the statewide farm organization support is a member. Businesses are represented. The various agencies are represented, as I said earlier, the five different agencies, cities large and small. Fishing organizations are represented. Soil and water conservation districts are represented. I mentioned the statewide farm organizations, businesses are represented, lakes and streams, nonprofit organizations are represented, environmental organizations are represented, and the statewide hunting organizations are represented. Along with that, the University of Minnesota has a representative on the board. It's a cross-section of folks from various areas of expertise. I assure you the board does not agree on everything, and I certainly do not agree with every recommendation they make personally. And as I said earlier, we certainly, as a legislature, have the right to tweak it, and probably should. And I have personally in the past made some minor changes to the recommendations. This bill, as it's been presented to us, makes wholesale changes, moving millions of dollars into different areas that, while I'm not trying to invalidate any of those projects, I would just say that some of them would be more appropriately funded in other ways. And if it were me, I'd go back to the council and try and work through it with them and get their support for my recommendations if I had some changes to be made.
Okay, I do want to point out that as I go by here, I see large portions of the Clean Water Council's recommendations being carried through in all three ones. So I think, you know, just try and pretend that they've been, to try and say that they've been ignored, really doesn't, at least do my visual averaging doesn't end up telling us that. Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, Madam Chair, the biggest cut in Representative Wagenius's proposal is to Bowser in their grants program. I'm wondering if they could come down and answer a few questions.
Okay. Is there a representative from Bowser here? And I will point out, as Representative Wagenius said, it was partially because something is being done in PCA. But would you please give your name for the tape?
Sure, Madam Chair. Sarah Stroman. I'm an assistant director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and
Director Stroman, to quote Representative Wagenius, random acts of conservation. kind of sounds like you're haphazard and the idea that we should be spending money on the ground through a Bowser grant program might not make any sense. And I'm just curious, this program, it's actually misleading on the spreadsheet. It looks like Representative Wagenius has entirely cut the program. That's really not true. She didn't cut off $40 million of it, even though the lines kind of show that. The next line underneath it, grants to watershed with multi-year plans, I believe they would be similar grants as long as they had more than a one-year plan. So it's really only fair to say that she cut it by $30 million, not by the $40 million. What kind of work in throughout Minnesota won't be done? We understand there'll be a number of studies, and we'll study if in Wisconsin where people were getting sick from viruses. We're now going to study them before we know of anybody getting sick, but we're going to spend millions to study them in case somebody might be getting sick, or we're going to give a couple of million, $7 million to the DNR to study some more stuff because we might do it. We're going to spend a bunch of money on groundwater that we won't use the wells we already have to study, but we'll drill some new wells. What won't we get done for this $30 million? What kind of random acts of conservation do you do out on the ground?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Stroman. Let me make one comment about what you know, I think it's not a bad idea to study if viruses are there before someone gets sick. I guess I'll present myself as the best expert on viruses on this committee, because if you go into my office, you'll see an electron microscope photograph of a virus and the DNA from that virus, which I actually did with my own hands. So I know a lot about viruses. Okay, let's.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I think maybe the best way for me to answer that is describe what our grant program has funded in the past. So these grant programs are to local units of government to fund practices on the ground to protect and restore surface water and groundwater. The project applications come to us from the local units of government. They represent projects that are reflective of those areas' highest priorities from their local plans, whether that's their local water plan or a TMDL that's been developed for the area. So right now, over the past biennium, we get requests for 2 to 3 times the amount of funding we've had. So essentially what this means is we will fund fewer projects.
Madam Chair, thank
Representative
you.
Representative
McNamara. Ms. Stroman, I'm not positive on this, but do you fund things like rainwater gardens?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we have in the past funded rain gardens as one practice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Stroman, we've been blessed on the East Metro to be led really by the City of Maplewood. The City of Maplewood, I can remember when I was still a landscape contractor, actually installing rainwater gardens within the City of Maplewood as an example of how we could redo our thoughts about what we do with the water coming off our streets, and instead of pumping it right into our lakes. Really was innovative in how they did that. And to think that there's things like this that we're doing on the ground, you have 3 times the amount of grants currently. So if we cut the program down to a fourth, you now have 12 times as many grants, assuming the people still want to get your money. You now would only give 1/12 of it. So those of us that in 2008 thought, wouldn't it be cool if we had some money to spend on the ground and put it in the environment instead of still going down and really do stuff out on the landscape. And we had innovative communities like Maplewood who said, we're willing to stick our neck out and try some of this stuff. Rainwater gardens, turnarounds, you wouldn't probably be funding that. But sometimes in a turnaround, we actually incorporate rainwater gardens with them. Some of this innovative stuff that's really working today that the people in 2008 voted for. And we're seeing examples of it on the ground that people can relate to it and say, this is really cool, we're getting it done. Instead, we're going to go down the street to where a couple of buildings are, and we're going to fund a bunch of people to go in some cubicles and spend some money and study some stuff that we don't really know how good it's going to work, but we're going to do it. And then we're going to wonder why in a couple years, when some of us may not be here, maybe it'll be 8 years from now, there's going to be a thing on the ballot to repeal all this because they don't know what we're getting. but they've heard stories about funding it in some cubicle in some building owned by the Chinese instead of doing things like in the East Metro where we're building rainwater gardens, or better yet, think of all the work you do out in the country to get farmers to put an innovative drain tile, use wood chips to catch the water, the neat kind of things we're trying to do that by the extra sales tax money we've been able to do. What are we afraid of here? A competitive grant by some consultants, citizens that get, what, $66 a day to come to the meeting? They're experts, and they've given us insight. Instead, we're going to go in our little office and rewrite the whole bill and figure out we know better. This is exactly the kind of stuff that we should not be doing, members. Do the right thing, and let's get some advice. Well, if we want to make some tweaks, let's make some tweaks. That's okay. Raise some legitimate concerns about something being done wrong. But as soon as we go to this wholesale, we know better attitude, we lose all the credibility for the few things we may want to change that have reason for them. And I just think when you look at the innovative things, some farmer, maybe out in New Ulm or Big Stone County or the city of Maplewood that I can think of that 15 years ago, Madam Chair, was innovative enough to think we should be doing rainwater gardens. And look at all the communities across the metro that are doing them today and to think that this is some of the money we're using it for, but we know better.
Well, Representative Wiggins.
Just a short response. We need to do our math a little bit better. One of the things you're arguing is that we're not doing projects on the ground because it's been cut from Bowser. Actually, some of the money has been shifted to other agencies for projects on the ground. For example, $2 million for shoreline restoration into DNR. That's projects on the ground. All the subsurface water system money was sent to PCA because Bowser was having trouble tracking it, and so we could not tell what we were getting for the dollars spent. And then, of course, the Clean Water Partnership is a PCA. These are all things that are done on the ground. It just happened to go to different agencies to get different work done. And so the money, the math is totally incorrect when you're talking about wholesale changes. We did move about a little over $10 million into taking care of our groundwater, which is the drinking water for 75% of Minnesotans, and that's out of almost $200 million, about $10 million, a little bit more than $10 million for groundwater drinking water.
Okay. You know, I think we've heard a fair amount on both sides. Representative Lilly, do you have...
Well, Madam Chair, and just I'm just going to kind of, you know, you brought up Maplewood, and you know, we're blessed to have a major company there, 3M, but they've been really known for their innovation. But the city of Maplewood has also been known for their innovations in the water gardens you talk about, and I believe Chair Kahn has quoted their city ordinance on night lights. And some of those things, and the roundabouts are interesting. And I spent a year going to school in England, and I happen to like them, but some people vividly hate them, and you know, think they're wrecking America. So it's up at the level of the Second Amendment sort of issues. So you know, so keep that in mind with some of these innovations are a little different and uncomfortable, but okay. The rain gardens have been great, and they clearly are making a difference. Last summer, or the last couple of years, they've been working on a project with the Maplewood Mall, and you know, obviously there's a huge parking lot there, and they've worked with the watershed folks, and they're doing, you know, trying to, you know, claim some of that water instead of having it just go right into the chain of lakes over there.
Okay.
But we, just quickly, I guess my point is, I really like the bill as it's presented by the committee. I wasn't on the committee, but by Chair Wiggenius, because it has, we really have a problem, and I think it's kind of this canary in the minefield
and a scenario where White Bear Lake, and I know you know the lake, and it's a disaster. And she, in her bill, actually has some of that. And unfortunately, and not that the Clean Water folks wouldn't have done it in the future in a timely manner, but this gets it done, gets the ball moving. And I really think it's vitally important, and it helps tell the story of what's going on with the water in Minnesota. So I hate to say it, Representative Torgelson, but I'm going to support Chair Wagenius's bill as presented because of that innovation. And I think it's really important for the whole state, and it's for some of the reasons that Representative McNamara mentioned. So,
okay. I think we've really heard both sides of this. And a roll call being requested, the clerk will now take the roll.
Kahn?
No.
Breitner?
No.
Green?
Yes.
Houseman?
No.
Lilly?
No.
McDonald?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
Wills?
Yes.
There being six ayes and six noes, the amendment fails. Oh, okay. Okay. We have one, try and get one more thing done. I do know that there was an amendment was brought to us by the Minneapolis Park people and Representative Loeffler. It is in her district, and we'd like to have a presentation on this amendment. Which number is it? Yes. Okay, it's the 828 amendment. This is a proposal. Oh, okay. Someone going to? Somebody here from Mr. Chamberlain? Are you? I thought we saw Representative Loeffler right here, and now. Now we've lost her.
Chair Kahn, we're searching.
What? Okay. Well, I think we can have the Minneapolis Park Board describing what they represented from the Minneapolis Park Board describing what this proposal is and where it came from. And then we'll have Representative Loeffler here. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Chair Kahn, committee, my name is Bruce Chamberlain. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for Planning with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. And the amendment that's before you is a suggestion to recreate an island that historically was present in the Mississippi River, adjacent to a parcel of property that the Park Board has recently purchased for a park. And the island, which is called Halls Island, was dredged and removed from the river channel in 1966. And essentially the mainland of the adjacent mainland was expanded by dredging the island. And what we're suggesting as part of the vision for recreating a park at this site is to reestablish the island, reestablish the channel between the island and the mainland, and reestablish the historic shoreline that once existed in the river channel. The island is approximately 4 acres in size, and primarily the use would be habitat with some interpretive recreation on the island as well as access. And at this point, I will turn it over to Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chamberlain, and thank you, Madam Chair and members, for considering this. This has got my community all excited because while we are on the shores of the mighty Mississippi, we are the industrial part of the mighty Mississippi in Minneapolis, and we have children who live a few blocks away who've never even touched its waters, and we're looking forward to having a chance to do that. And
just, just a second, sure. I need to move the H-28 amendment. Okay.
Thank you.
Go on.
And this...
This island has some amazing history, which is why I asked them to hand out the history of Hall's Island, because it actually is a story of public health and of two landmark rulings, both at the federal and at the state level on islands. And the story begins with Pearl Hall. Pearl was a male's name back in the mid-1870s, who was a teenager working at one of the lumber yards along the banks and saving up his money, and ultimately got to go to medical school at the U. And eventually was elected in 1901 to be the Minneapolis health officer after he'd become a physician. And one of the biggest problems at that time in public health was, what do you do with garbage? Bet you've heard a little bit about that. And so he was looking for a site for a garbage crematory. And he thought of this island that he remembered seeing off the industry that he used to work at when he was young. And so he decided that would be a lovely place, because back then we didn't understand that water was a wonderful resource. We saw it, unfortunately, as a place of dumping grounds. And so he wanted to figure out who owned that island. And he, with great fanfare, went off to Washington, D.C., assuming that it was the federal government that owned it, because usually the federal government owned islands that had been platted and were in the navigable waters. And lo and behold, they found out that it hadn't been mapped before statehood. It had been one of those islands that probably, as they say, accreted, you know, some deadheads got stuck, and then it grew, and it was several acres by this time. But since it hadn't been mapped, it was the subject of a lot of discussion, including the Federal Corps of Engineers, and they ultimately decided that it was the state that owned it. So he rushed back to St. Paul and homesteaded it, and built a little shanty and got deed of it from the state. And so the planning continued. There's all kinds of plot twists here about why it didn't become that. And then they went to a public bath. And then it became another ownership issue, and our Minnesota Supreme Court made an absolutely landmark ruling about island law again, and said, no, you don't own the island. It's the people who own the adjoining land. So they had to eminently domain, condemn the land, and the city bought those parcels and owned it until 1962, because public baths were no longer needed, because we actually got running water in northeast Minneapolis, and we didn't need those kind of facilities anymore, and it had been unused. At which point, Shear Brothers Lumber brought it.
Representative Laffont, I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you, in 1962, it was filled in by Shear Brothers Lumber, and we lost the island. And I don't know whether they did it with permits or not. So we have since now planned to recreate the island, but we've run into a question with the Department of Natural Resources, who said their regulations say you can't put fill in a water body. And we believe we're restoring a historic island that was there in the 1870s and was only filled in the 1960s. It will recreate a wonderful opportunity for us to see both habitat and a recreational opportunity for our residents.
Okay. I do think we do have to have a brief response from the Department of Natural Resources, and then I think we're going to vote on this and then recess. So, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While the DNR is coming down, have you been in contact with the Corps of Engineers, Representative Loeffler?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkel said yes, and in the National Park Service. And the Corps of Engineers has said, you know, if the DNR doesn't approve it, then we're not sure we can. But then the National Park Service has told us that they actually have jurisdiction domain over this, because this is a national park. And so I think that issue is still, if we can resolve it at the state level, that the state is supportive of restoring this, I think other partners will come along. And I think that's something we'd like to pursue, but we need to start first with clarifying the state expectations.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So you think they might come along, but you have not actually gotten any approval from these federal agencies?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, I can tell you that a meeting of the steering committee for this whole River First project, we were informed by representatives of the National Park Service that they actually have jurisdiction above the Corps of Engineers in terms of national parks, and they have to work together, and they have not yet done that. So I think that there's still discussion yet to happen.
What what passing this amendment will do was, would be to incorporate the community's decision, the local areas and the National Park Service decision, and obviously the conversation will go on as we do this. But Mr. Meyer obviously has a contrasting view.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and I did hand out kind of our perspective of this project. We are working with the Parks Board, but I'll start at the bottom bullet here. In January of 2013, the Corps of Engineers advised the Minneapolis Parks Recreation Board that they have jurisdiction over the project and will probably not be able to issue a permit for the project. So just to answer that last question first, this amendment will also set a precedent because it is it exempting a project from Minnesota rules that will allow it to place fill in a water body. Okay. So it goes far beyond any creation of habitat. It's exempting from several sections of 6115 this project. So we have basic concerns over that and a precedent that does set. But the background was there. If you look at just our problems and fact statements here, it says that the island that they are looking to reconstruct, from our point of view, was a pile of sawdust that created the lumber that the island in the beginning that was eventually washed away. The consultant is also proposing to construct a high-rise apartment, from what we understand, across from the island that will be inconsistent with the Mississippi River Critical Area Standards. Creation of the island of the beds of public waters has been prohibited by rule since at least the 70s, and this prohibition has been consistently applied across the state. We did send a letter to the Parks Board consultant that clearly stated that the DNR could not authorize the island construction. Again, in February of 2013, we sent another letter advising them that we could not approve the island construction plan, answering another number of questions that they had. And while we do support the creation of islands for wildlife habitat on lower portions of the Mississippi, our staff have found that there would be little benefit to create such habitat on this part of the river.
Well, Madam Chair?
Representative Offer.
One of the key issues here has been the issue of whether or not you're putting fill into a body of water to create something that hasn't existed before, and that we're just really creating a man-made island. And part of why I shared the history with you is that we have both state and federal court rulings that have recognized this as an established island of significant enough size to merit public investment through its history. And that it was, the project actually is a net out-migration of soil. It'll be shaping the island a little bit differently, but there'll actually be a net removal of about 60,000 cubic yards. So there'll actually be less. The biggest problem that has been done to the river was the filling of the channel. And, you know, I don't know who authorized that, but we're just trying to restore it with something that did exist, and I think the historical record is really clear, and it's been frustrating that the DNR keeps telling us that this was just something that was created, and we really believe it was a solid part of our history for decades, for over 100 years. And that's what we're trying to do, is reclaim our history after it was filled in 1963 or 66. We're not sure the exact time frame.
Madam Chair, the amendment as it's drafted is a pretty serious policy decision for the legislature to make. And I wish we would have been able to have this discussion in the Environment Policy Committee, because it does set precedent and it does create a lot of other potential problems. The next amendment could be someone to extend or to not withstand rules to fill in a wetland. So I don't know where this will stop.
Well, you know, the frustration to us is that this is a clearly, you know, this to apply the same kind of standards, and we've always had this problem. We often had this problem with DNR in the city of Minneapolis, has no understanding that the fact that putting fill into a place that has been totally destroyed by all kinds of, all kinds of things have been changed in this. We're not dealing with the natural, but it's not like asking to put land out to make another, you know, house plot in Lake Minnetonka or something like that. This is, you have a plat that shows you there was an island there. There's a history of having been an island there. You can't say it was created by sawdust because the lumber mills came in way after the existence of the island. And to have that kind of statewide attitude applied to something that has a tremendous amount of local study, a lot of local input, and a strong desire to have the same kind of water access in Representative Loeffler's neighborhood and in my neighborhood that other people have in the state is something that we ought to look at. I mean, obviously, if there isn't a permit, if this doesn't mean that we'll get a permit from the Corps, if we don't, if it's a fight between in the federal agency between the national parks and the Corps, you know, this may not have an effect. Representative Loeffler and the Park Board thinks it does have an effect, and I wish we would vote this. Vote yes on this and pass it on. Representative Erdogan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just real quick for Mr. Meyer. If we were to pass this on, and you have indicated that the Corps of Engineers would not grant a permit, would that then have precedence? Would it be built? Could it be rebuilt if the Corps of Engineers would not approve it?
Madam Chair, Representative Berdahl, they would need to get permits from the Corps and from the state to do the, well, this amendment, this policy amendment in this bill will exempt them from all the public water fill statutes that are listed in the amendment. So one of the sections it's exempting it from is talking about looking at alternatives that have minimal impact. So this is not a minimal impact project. But again, this is a huge policy discussion that we feel should not be involved in a legacy bill and should be discussed within the Environmental Policy Committee.
Well, you know, the problem probably started because DNR granted the permits to fill it in the 1960s. Now, I'm not blaming you for that, but I think to try and restore the legacy of this area is a perfectly appropriate thing to do. So. Any other
Madam
representative
Chair,
Mr. Chamberlain?
Madam Chair, members, I just want to point out that the Park Board feels very strongly that we, in this case, want to do the right thing. We believe restoration of this island is the right thing, and also that we have not applied for any permits. We have not submitted any permit applications yet at this point.
Okay. Any Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It's clear that there are some serious questions to be asked about this amendment. It goes well beyond the jurisdiction of this committee. I would urge members to vote no and request a roll call.
Okay. Any other comments? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I can say that this project has not been approached lightly by anyone who's been involved in it. And quite honestly, I think for a long period of time, we thought the DNR just didn't understand that the history of this place or that it was going to be a net removal of actual soil from the river, that they thought we were actually going to totally be creating something by just dumping land into the water body. And so it really felt to me like it was going to be, it just was just a misunderstanding that needed to be worked out. And I do think that it's important for you to know that because this is a national park, the National Park Service and the Corps of Engineers are going to have to consult, and they have not done that yet. But this is the first step to allowing us to recreate what was a historical feature within our community.
Okay. Roll being requested. Representative McNamara.
Well, I just wanted to make one point, Madam Chair. First of all, I wanted to say welcome to my good friend, Mr. Chamberlain, who does a great job at the Park Board. But, Madam Chair, you made mention that we really didn't log Minnesota until after. The map I see on this shows the island in 1905. Actually, the boom in logging in Minnesota was during the 1800s, the late 1800s. And the map, maybe there's another map that shows the island at a different time, but I see the one that shows 1903.
Yeah. Right. But I think the sawdust, I thought, was coming from the Sherrill Lumber Yards, which were right next to that, which certainly were put later than that. I was just countering Mr. Meyer's argument that this was just a island was not an island, it was just a pile of sawdust.
Thank you.
I think when you read, if you read the material that Ms. Loeffler has given us and the things that were done at that island, including the construction of a house, I think it was clearly not just a pile of sawdust. So, okay. Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Kahn?
Yes.
Schreiber?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Hausman? Lilly?
Yes.
McDonald?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
No.
Bernal?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Ward?
Yes.
Wills?
No.
It being six yes and five no's, the amendment is adopted. I'm afraid at this point we do have to recess until 7 p.m. So, and we'll be again here in room 5. Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. We have a couple of cleanup amendments to deal with, and I'll call on Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I move for reconsideration of Amendment 28. That would, just to make folks familiar, that was one of our final discussions on the, it was Loeffler Amendment in related to a project in Minneapolis.
So, okay, any discussion? Any discussion of that?
Any
reason? Someone doesn't want it in the bill. So, okay, and I. All those in favor of reconsideration, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The motion. All those opposed. Motion passes. It's now on the table for reconsideration. So we now have the 828 amendments before us, and you know, I think this is outrageous actions by DNR, but I don't think we have a chance, a choice to not take it out of the bill at this point. And we're just going to have to work on trying to undo the damage that DNR did to this section of the Minneapolis of the Minnesota River, Mississippi River, in some other way. So, so we now have the amendment before us, and I guess Representative Lilly, you're going to urge people to vote no on the amendment.
I would encourage members to vote no on the amendment, and thank you for this reconsideration.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment say aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
All right.
Okay.
It's hard to know what to do.
No, <it's>
all right.
All right. The
McNamara vote?
No. Now,
yeah.
No. The next, now, the next amendment, which is also similar, is the A50 amendment, and I guess I'll move the A50 amendment, also reluctantly. This is what I thought, this was page 43, delete lines 8 to 11. Oh, that's the... that was the amendment that we had a lot of discussion on in two committees on the hard rock mining. And then page 58, delete sections 28, and page 59, delete sections 30. This is something which I think ought to be, and we're just going to have to try and work on some other place. This ought to be just a technical amendment to the bill. This was the place where this was something that passed. I don't even think there was much controversy about it 2 years ago. This is the Critical Areas Act in the metro area in the river, and the clock just ran out and the rules were not completed. And so this was just an extension of the rulemaking process. But apparently there are some objections to doing it in this manner. Representative Hansen, do you have anything to say about that? Because you knew this area, you know this issue more than I do. I think it was put in.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we'll continue the discussion.
Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, this actually is an issue that I have asked, and I asked 2 years ago, for the agencies and the administration to bring it forward in a timely manner, and unfortunately they didn't. I agree, it's a really, really tough issue that needs a lot of discussion, and maybe next year will be a great opportunity to have that discussion. Thank you.
Well, it seems to me, you know, we had the discussion, we decided we were doing it in this area, and it seems to me the proper place to have the discussion was in the rules process. And so it seemed to me it was at the level of almost a technical amendment to just extend the time for the rules. But I think Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I think we'll have the discussion in the next few days.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion passes. Okay. Now, we have a technical staff correction. This is an oral amendment. This is page 78, line 15. Second number in line 15 should be 1290750, and the totals are correct, just that the second number was wrong. And on and then on page 2, this was brought to us by Bowser. Again, we doubled something and didn't double an internal number. So on line 2, page 21B, we want to delete 75,000 and insert 150,000 because we didn't do the same amount needed to be in there for 2 years. And again, the totals are correct. It's line 2.16 on page 2. And so the totals are correct. These are just correcting the internal numbers to make the totals correct. Okay? All those in favor of that amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Now, Representative Ertl has an amendment before us, A45.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move A45. And this one addresses what some folks, I think, perceive as a problem. Well, frankly, I talked with Mr. Noble about this. He thinks that it is permitted for money to be used outside of the state. However, there have been questions raised, and I think that it's valuable to make a direction. And we are directing here that the travel must be directly related to and necessary for a project that is based in Minnesota. So that would remove, I think, some questions. Essentially, we're tightening things up a little bit. Because there is no other prohibitive language. I believe Representative Lilly was interested in this topic as well, and commend him for bringing this up earlier in the week.
I think we talked about this earlier in the week. I guess I would support the Ertl Amendment. Any other? This is A45 is the amendment. Any further discussion on this amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment passes. Okay. This is, again, the kind of technical amendment to make sure that we don't run out of money for one of these projects. This is page 24, line 1, amendment A35. The amendment is to just make sure that the amount will be available, that the amount in the second year will be available in the first year if the amount is insufficient. Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just bring this amendment forward. It gives more flexibility to the Lizard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and I would urge Greenville.
Oh, are you moving it?
What's that?
Okay, you're moving it.
I am moving it,
okay,
Chair,
good.
Unless you've already
good.
Moved it. I don't want to.
No, 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 I'd much rather have you move it. I'd like you to cooperate with it. Okay, I'd like to support things that you move. So, Representative
Corkle. I move the amendment.
Okay. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Okay. This is A32. This is an issue that has been brought to me by some of the discussions we've had back and forth. It kind of came up in the Outdoor Heritage Council proposals. This was the one that this is the problem of people of programs being rejected, things being rejected, and nobody knowing why. I brought this forward. This one is specifically for the Outdoor Heritage Council proposals. Yes, we'll have Mr. Becker. Yes. Yeah. I'll move the amendment before us. Mr. Becker, this has been presented to Mr. Becker. We asked him for advice and see what he says.
Madam Chair, Bill Becker, Executive Director of the Lizard Sam's Council. This is good government, good grant making. We support the amendment. We think that the information that describes why you were denied a hearing ought to be provided in writing. We think we can do that. We think that applicants should apply on a level playing field, and we'll do that as well.
Okay. Is there any Representative Lilly?
Madam Chair and Mr. Becker, having served on Lizard Sam's, I'm just trying to figure out how this works. So, as a member, then, and Representative McNamara and I, and we vote on something and we decide. So, are we supposed to like fill out a form and say why I gave like Mark, you know, something a 90 versus an 87? Or how, I don't understand. Or is it just overall you, at the end of the day, you kind of say, well, you didn't make the cut because I don't quite how you get there. I don't quite understand.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, there's a two-step process to the recommendations of the Lizard Sam's Council. One is deciding which programs or applications should get a hearing, and then to hear and allocate money to the programs. The problem that this is addressing is getting a hearing, the very first step, the first hurdle. And the way that's done is each member receives a book at home of the applications filled out on a standard form. They're to read those and complete a rating sheet ranking each individual application against the 10 criteria that are published in the call for requests or request for proposals. Those ranking sheets for each individual member are posted on a website available for the public. They are summated and put in rank order of high score to low score, and comments are provided as well, and they are discussed, and a decision is made whether to hear them all or to draw a line someplace. In the In the round, two rounds ago, all the requests were heard. In the last round, there was a break in score of 4 points. It was pretty much a continuous distribution, except for the one with a 4-point difference between number 35 and number 36. The council determined that that would be the break at which they would make the decision on whether or not to hear a proposal. There were 5 proposals, I believe, that were below that, one of which was the Metro Parks and Open Space. I want to parenthetically say that I was surprised, and the record supports that. The amendment before you asks us to explain why you fell below the line if the line is drawn and you're eliminated from hearing. We can do that. We can analyze the scores and provide information. We can't participate in any gossip or anything like that. It has to be factual and based on the criteria. The amendment before you asks us to ensure that the information about the project is made available to the members. We think that's right. It ought to be done. We'll do it. We think this is so good, we think everybody ought to do it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lillig.
Madam Chair and Mr. Becker, thank you. I'm always impressed with your thoroughness and professionalism. His final comment is kind of what I was thinking on this amendment. Is it just seems like the clean water and the other parts of the pie should be under the same expectations. That was just my comment.
Well, one of the things is I would suggest that we put this in here, and of course, as it goes through the process, we can discuss how it could be added to the other ones. It's a little hard when we. A lot of the others are not project specific at this point, so it's a little hard to quite see how you would do that. You know, you'd have to have maybe the granting agency do it and so forth. So my suggestion is that we put this in here at this point, and then we look at how we would. We also look at how we would apply it to the others as it goes through the process. But I see a lot more work for Mr. Becker in a sense. I would say that this writing shall state in writing to the proposer, I would think that that's something he's probably going to have to do in a summary of those sheets that come out. So,
Madam Chair, I understand that.
Yeah. I'm comfortable voting for it under the circumstances. Any other discussion about this? Okay. Did I move it? Yes, I did. Okay. All those in favor of the 832 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, this is 836. I understand this is a motion from, this is a suggestion from Representative Green. Do you want to move the 836 amendment, Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll move the amendment.
Okay. Representative Green moves the 836 amendment. You want to explain it?
Sure. This actually came forward after I read the audit reports that the legislative auditor had put out. There's language in here that describes language in the legacy amendment that describes the rules, but there's nothing in place that says what happens if the rules aren't, or you know, if the qualifications aren't met, or if the rules aren't abided by. And so Mr. Nobles, I talked with Mr. Nobles, and this is his recommendation for the language that would rectify the problem.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll put on my audit commission hat. We always look to see if any committees are directing the legislative auditor to do anything. I don't think that this amendment does, and I think it's a good amendment, so I would encourage support of the amendment.
Is Mr. Noble here?
He's downstairs.
Oh, he's testifying downstairs.
Madam Chair. Okay, Representative Hansen.
And I would confirm, I did talk with Mr. Nobles about this. He is testifying downstairs, and they said that they could do it, so.
Okay, I'd like to set this aside until we can kind of, what I have a little problem, and I've been on the Audit Commission before, and I basically agree with the direction in which it's going. I have a little problem is the how the recipient demonstrates compliance and things like that. I mean, I think what we usually do, and in a sense what happens, we usually have a legislative auditor's report, and then we have discussion back and forth. If it's a department, there's some kind of statement from the department and so forth. And the and you know, it's not quite so absolute as this is that you know, it means that, does this mean that they can't apply? How do they demonstrate it? I'm not concerned about the direction in this is going. I'm concerned about the absoluteness of the language. So, Representative Willie.
Madam Chair, I'm kind of surprised because I totally buy the concept, but no, having gone through this for a few times, I really think everybody that's in this room, you know, knows, you know, that they're held under pretty extreme scrutiny, you know, given it's, you know, kind of special money that the voters approved it and that sort of thing. But we heard some testimony that kind of makes me agree with Representative Kahn. It was the with the county fair issue, and I thought that maybe is a or the, you know, the money that went to the county fairs, and we, when they were talking about it, they said that, you know, a couple of them bought some paint or they did something that didn't quite line up, and I just hate to see a scenario where, you know it just ends up being a bigger, you know, in the newspaper or something, where someone might have made a little mistake like that where they bought some paint. Do you remember that, Representative Erdahl? And I just think it would be unfortunate that we turn them, you know, that, so whatever county couldn't, in that case, couldn't have access to funds then for a year or forever or whatever the bill says. So that's just a comment. And
it says future.
And I know you mean well, and I can.
So it's not even like the next, you know, future funding is kind of no limit to what future means. Representative Erdahl, you have...
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I think I'd just like to comment on this, that, you know, I think there is flexibility. It says if the Office of the Legislative Auditor determines, they have criteria by which they examine the procedures of the funding recipients, and you know, we're allowing them to determine, to make the determination in this instance.
But the problem is, it doesn't say whether that with the laws, rules, or regulations. It doesn't say if it was correctable, or if it was trivial, or if it was, you know, critical, or something like that. I'm a little worried about the absoluteness of this language. Representative
Chair, I really wish that Mr. Nobles was here because however. I'm going to stick my neck out and give you some of the conversation, and if he contradicts me, then that would be great too. But it does say here that that they are only ineligible until they demonstrate compliance, and so the reason this was brought up is because earlier in this committee, one of the testifiers was Mr. Nobles in the auditor's office, and I read their reports. I read them all, and I started tagging the violations that they had found, and they're not violations that somebody bought paint. They're multi thousands of dollars in some of the, and I don't think that these people maliciously did this at all. Mm-hmm. I think that this was probably a new process, like we talked. However, this is a lot of money, and the people voted for this amendment, and I think that the rules are in place to ensure that the money is spent where it's supposed to be spent and in compliance with the rules that were set forward. And so all this does, it doesn't try to punish anyone. It just says, bring your reports up to date and make sure that all your paperwork is done, because this is very important. And there's a lot of people that apply for this money. And that's why I brought this forward.
What I'm a little concerned about is how you demonstrate compliance. Let's say somebody bought something that they weren't supposed to buy. Do they just say, okay, we shouldn't have bought that, and so we're not going to do it again? Is that demonstrating compliance? Is returning the money for it if they don't have that anymore? Is that which might be a problem with smaller organizations and smaller groups that get this. If there was an argument about in one place where a library hired somebody that I guess Representative Dean thought that they shouldn't have hired. I mean, do we then have a discussion about whether that was a proper bringing in of that person, or was it within their authority to do that? Okay. See, that's what. So. Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, then because Mr. Nobles isn't here, you said to lay this over.
Yes.
Can we do that then?
Sure. Let's just leave this, and I guess someone's asked him to come here, and we'll talk to him about if he sees, I'm just worried about absolute language applied to non-absolute solutions.
Or Madam Chair, if it's acceptable, I would be happy to work with Representative Hansen to the language.
Let's leave it. We'll get to it, back to it before we adjourn. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Move on to Parks and Trails Fund. This is A47, which I think is a McDonald's appropriation. Which is a McDonald's amendment. A47?
Madam Chair, we're not going to present that tonight.
Okay. Do you get special extra points for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
When is it?
Okay.
A47?
This is A42. This is, he's not. Oh, here. It's a Representative Green amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This one could be a little more controversial. I was not going to bring this bill this year, but in listening to some of the testimony and even your comments, how you wanted to see these trails start to connect, and so I did offer this. This is going to be controversial because this does pull some money from the Metro Parks. It's from the Above the Falls appropriation that's in the bill. I was reading some on that from the report of the Above the Falls plan, and the money is apparently appropriated for land acquisition, and in the report it says that one of the changes since the adoption of the original Above the Falls plan was the subsequent adoption of industrial land use and employment policy plan. And it says the plan raised awareness of the shrinking supply of industrial land in that area. And that plan, and as far as I know, that project is not ready to go yet. And my project is. So that's why I brought it.
Okay. But two problems with this. One, your project is in, this is in the bonding bill. So essentially we'd be doing it twice. So it's already in there. And we've also, it's by removing the money from Minneapolis, you flow the statutory numbers off from the what we fixed this morning. And I think there's a lot of possible acquisition going on in that above the falls question, and so on. You know, I think they're going to have lots of opportunities to do it. But I guess my main problem with this is that we're already, you're taking money away from something that needs the money to fund something which is already covered elsewhere in the legislature.
And I respect that, Madam Chair, but I will too say that I think that in the bill there was also a recommendation that they pull money from the DNR and stick it into so the 40-40-20 became 43-37-20. So there was some changes there too, but you know, I understand what you're saying.
It's one of the problems that I have with exact percentages, and I hope that by the time we get to doing this again, if either I'm doing it or someone else is doing it or one of you guys are doing it, that we're going to have the kinds of recommendations from both the Metropolitan Council and from DNR and from this new regional council that we can kind of really look at individual projects as they're, you know, based on their basis. But I guess if, you know, I would suggest that this throws our bill out of balance and it funds something that's already funded somewhere else, so I would suggest that we vote against this. Okay. Anything else? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
A motion fails. A46. This is a representative.
46?
Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And move A46 and say, I'll take about a minute on this one.
What?
I'm going to take about a minute here.
All right. We don't have to take
On August 23rd.
Your Wikipedia again?
1862. The U.S. Dakota War had just started a few days before, and in the prairies of the lakes of Candiota County, the Dakota warriors attacked the settlement of Guri Andreessen. They killed her husband. They killed her oldest son, critically wounded her younger son, took her two daughters away, and left Guri and her baby hiding in a root cellar. Guri then found her wounded son, bound his wounds, and then harnessed a unbroken team of oxen to a sled that she found, went to the neighboring cabin where her daughter and son-in-law lived. There had been an attack there. Sweet Charlie Carlson was killed. The rest of the people in the cabin had left, except for Solomon Foote and Oscar Erickson, the son-in-law. She bound their wounds, put both of them into the sled wagon, and transported them 25 miles to Forest City. And this brave pioneer woman, therefore, had rescued and saved the lives of at least three people, was reunited there with her daughters who had escaped at Forest City, and I think deserves to be commemorated in our state capitol with a bust. However, that said, I've had a conversation with the State Historical Society folks, and
what do they think?
They're thinking we're getting a little bit overflow on our bust to the state capitol. And so though I believe that Guri deserves a place and that the CAP board and the State Historical Society will give due consideration to placing Guri somewhere
on our Capitol grounds, I will withdraw this amendment.
Thank you. Okay, I suggest,
and I believe that she deserves it more than Nellie Stone Johnson, but that's another time.
Well, I was thinking that, you know, that's kind of a, that's a conflict where there are people on both sides of that. Maybe we ought to have two busts in the, you know, one. Thank you very much. Okay.
So I guess you're
looking. Yeah. Okay. We'll continue the discussion on that at some point. Okay. Representative Bernal, 848.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move 848. This one moves the civics programs under the Minnesota Historical Society. It leaves the money the same as it was before. It basically carves out some language here so that folks will understand that this is not in addition to the Historical Society funding. It's a separate category under the Historical Society. I have talked with the representatives of the Historical Society and the Humanities Center that we are moving this from, and this is at the request of the civics education people.
Anyone? Any discussion of this? Is there any? You know, I know it's
a fine piece of legislation.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion on this? Any comments from anyone in the audience on this? Okay. All those in favor of the A48 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. There's a Turkelson amendment, A49.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the
849
amendment.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I was reviewing the bill today, I noticed that some funding had been eliminated between the previous version of the bill and the DE that we're working off of. For the second year of funding for the Southern Minnesota Children's Museum, and I'm trying to replace that. I wasn't sure where it had gone, Madam Chair, so I couldn't actually bring it back from where it had flown off to, but so it's coming off the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Peter Olson, the Executive Director of the Southern Minnesota Children's Museum, is here if we would like to ask him questions, or if you would just like to explain what's happening. I appreciate it.
I'll tell you where it's gone, because I very reluctantly removed this money in the draft. Where it did was what it went back to the bottom line, because we were told we were cutting the reserve down too small. So maybe, does Robert, do you want to talk about what this does to our reserve?
Madam Chair, currently in the bill, there's a projected balance of $1,632,000 at the end of fiscal year 15, and that's a little below 3% of the anticipated revenues that year. And as you may remember, there has been some discussion of MMB at least having guidance for a reserve of higher than that. If we send another $200,000, that would bring the reserve down to about 2.5% of the anticipated revenues for fiscal year 15.
And what was one of the questions was, what has the reserve been in the previous biennium in those two?
Madam Chair, I don't have the numbers with me, but it has ranged. I think the first year of the legacy funds, it was higher than 3%. And then
Madam Chair, I think we ranged between 2 and 3% last time.
Can I? You know, I really kind of sympathize with what you're doing, but I really don't want us to get down to the point that we get yelled at for not being fiscally conservative. How about going with 100,000 instead of 200,000? This is a new program that we are funding, and they do. And the other thing is, they also would be eligible to get money through the grants process, which is what they did in the past. This is just a new line item.
Madam Chair, I'd accept your oral amendment to my amendment.
Okay. Well, let's just. Okay. Any other comments on this? All those in favor of the, I don't know, he'll just incorporate it. Okay. So we now have the,
Chair and representatives, on the line above it, then the 2,625,000 appropriation would be 2,525,000.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Torkelson, 849 amendment, and all those in favor, and just understand it's Representative Torkelson's obligation to explain why we're not being as fiscally conservative as we should. So, all those in favor of all those in favor of the Torkelson amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair.
What?
Madam Chair. And I'm sure that no one will accuse you of not being fiscally conservative.
I just want the blame shared a little bit. Yes, of course, I'm half as fiscally unconservative as he was. So, okay. Okay, the only other amendment now before us is the Green Amendment. So is there any public comment on anything that we've done? What?
Mr. Chair? Madam Chair?
Yes. What? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Nobles is here. You can talk to us about the Green Amendment, which I think you have.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Jim Nobles, Legislative Auditor, and my apologies, I was in another committee. But I understand you'd like my views on this amendment.
Yes. The 836 amendment.
I would like to thank Representative Green. It is very gratifying when legislators have this level of interest in our work and want to see it utilized and our recommendations implemented. And so I appreciate it very much. I think it's workable, Madam Chair. I think the concern might be about how does an entity demonstrate compliance. And it would be my understanding.
How would you like it if we said demonstrate compliance to the satisfaction of the legislative order?
Madam Chair, I would ask that not to be.
Why did I think that was going to be the answer?
I think it ought to be an issue that is brought before you and this committee. I would certainly be here if you wanted our input.
Okay.
But I don't think we should pass out a certificate of compliance. There can sometimes be some differences in our interpretation of a requirement. And if there is, I think we ought to bring that issue to you, and you ought to be the ultimate arbiter of whether or not an organization has demonstrated compliance. For example, we brought to you, I think it was last year, I lose track of time, an issue where we thought there was an ambiguity in the law, and that the department or the arts board had allowed through a grant regional arts organizations to use too much money for administrative expenses. Their interpretation of the law was different than ours, and that's because it was ambiguous. And so we did bring that issue to you, and there may be other occasions where we would bring the issue to you. But even if the law is clear and we have found noncompliance, and I would just add to this that we're talking mostly here about financial audit work, control compliance. That's where these issues come up. And usually they're fairly technical issues. you required a match on a grant. We determined they didn't have the match to the degree that you required it. And so sometimes it's pretty cut and dried, and I think the facts are clear. And I'd say 99% of the time, and maybe even more than that, because of the process we go through in doing audit work, we've reached agreement. And if you look at our audit reports and the letters that are in the back, typically the agency, the organization will say, we agree. We agree with the finding. We agree we were not in compliance. And then their willingness, their statement that they will rectify that. And so what will really need to occur is they will come before you, and they will tell you what they've done to come into compliance, and we can be here, and if we've done some follow-up work, we'll share that with you. But ultimately, I don't think this should depend on a certificate from the legislative auditor. I think you should determine whether or not somebody has fully come back into compliance and is therefore eligible for additional funding.
Okay. Any other? Well, you know, I'm just worried if this is too rigorous. If there are people that are going to be cut off that wouldn't really be. You know, if we're talking about the kind of discussion that we have at the end of a legislative auditor's report, most of it doesn't have this kind of strong.
Well, Madam Chair, again, I think all this really adds is a level of discussion that I think should occur here. I would just, for example, give you the example. Senator Rest, who, as you all know, has been on the Legislative Audit Commission many times chair. And so whenever she serves on a committee, governmental operations or wherever she is, she always, for any department or agency that comes before that committee, she gets the most recent financial audit report from the Office of Legislative Auditor, and she turns to the findings, and she says to the Attorney General, to the Commissioner of Commerce, to the Commissioner of MMB, or whatever the agency is, tell this committee, what have you done to comply with the Legislative Auditor's recommendation? Have you corrected this deficiency? Have you come into compliance? And that's where that discussion takes place. I'm sometimes there, sometimes not, but it is ultimately up to that committee of jurisdiction to make this determination as to whether or not the agency has demonstrated it. So if there is going to be any rigorous application, Madam Chair, it's going to come from you and your fellow members here on this committee.
Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Nobles, may come as a shock to you, Mr. Green, or Representative Green, that I've read the book as well. So, Mr. Nobles, talk me through this. So, there was some findings in the clean water area. So, what would be your suggestions? And I'm guessing that they went back to the Clean Water Council and decided to change things. Did they change things? And if they didn't, what happens? So you would say, come back here. So we should really, as a body, be kind of watching to make sure that they're, which I think we do, that they're following through. But maybe you can talk me just through that.
Well,
with the findings that were in your, I think that was that 2000, what year was that? That was like 3 years ago, right?
I believe so, Madam Chair, Representative Lilly. Well, you know, this is very much the same conversation I was having downstairs, and that is, how can the legislature more vigorously use the work of the Office of Legislative Auditor for legislative oversight and accountability? And I think the discussion down there, which is a proposal to do away with the Sunset Commission, and whatever you think of that, I mean, the conversation down there is that there needs to be stronger follow-up by legislative committees on evaluation reports, audit reports, and this is a mechanism to make that happen. And again, you know, I think you can be as rigorous or as lenient as you want to be in terms of accepting whether or not recipients have demonstrated compliance. I think it will simply elevate the discussion and trigger a discussion that might not otherwise occur.
Okay. I think that makes me a little bit more comfortable with it. Any other comments from committee members?
Madam Chair. Yes, Mr. Wood. Madam Chair, I was going to say earlier that I think Representative Hansen actually indicated that he had talked to Mr. Nobles about this, and Representative Green, thank you for bringing this forward. And Madam Chair, the other day we were having a discussion about virus, and you said something that you have a electron microscope, and you've got virus, and you've got something growing here and something growing there, and you were an expert in virus, and nobody here questions that for sure. I think Representative Erdahl said
it probably should have.
Yeah. Well, Representative Erdahl did say don't shake your hand, but I'll just keep that. But you know, we have an expert that says that this is good. Yeah. This is good. So I think we need to listen to our expert and support it and go for it.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Now, any other comments on the Green Amendment? What? Oh. Is it? Oh, okay. I think we fixed that up. Apparently, one little correction. So maybe we should leave it in and do some good stuff here. This is on page 4 of the amendment, line 10. Change the word trains to trails. it's glad that Representative Green gave us this big speech about how carefully he reads everything. So I'm glad in this case, at least, that someone read it a little more carefully. Okay.
Madam Chair, is he implying the light rail to light rail to Boston?
I think that's what we would have voted for. Okay. All those in favor of... actually, I think we can... Those things can get fixed, I hope. Anyway, all those in favor of the Green Amendment as 836 Amendment as Representative Green has fixed it, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay. It's the end of amendments. Okay. What was the green? Okay, so seeing no additional amendments, then is there further discussion so that the DE5 amendment to 1183, and now move, we already moved it, DE5 amendment as amended. So all those in favor of adopting the DE5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Okay. Discussion of the bill as amended. Isn't that enough? That was enough votes. Any more public comment on the bill? Any more public comment on the bill? I guess we adopted the amendment. We now have to pass the bill. The next motion is to pass the bill on to the Ways and Means Committee. Any public comments on the bill? I think everyone's sufficiently exhausted. Okay. anyone? Freiberg? Erdahl? Anyone wants to say something?
Yeah, you probably want to go last.
I
just wanted to, this has just been a fun committee to be on. It's definitely had the most variety, I think, of the ones I've been on, you know, the orchestra, the parks, the trails, the interesting dynamics with some of our councils. So just wanted to say this has been a fun bill to work on, and I'm excited to support it.
Let me first say is that we're probably not done meeting. One of the things that I've suggested that we do is for a lot of things occurred before us and they wanted individual grants, and we just gave a large grant to a bigger group. What I'd like to do is I'd like to have a list of those things that appeared before us and do some working papers of urging the granting agencies, you know, say that we've, and so I'd like any suggested of groups that appeared before us. And so so that doesn't have the force of law. It's something that I know we used to do all the time in appropriations bills, and I think it would be a useful thing to send off to the granting agencies, particularly as opposed to putting line items in for things that we weren't all that certain about, or for overburdening this with separate line items. So I do intend to have another you know, another meeting at some point when it's a little less tense with deadlines around here to do that. And if there's anything that was on our agenda that you think ought to be in that those working papers, things that should be considered, please submit it to staff so we can be in it. Now that we fix it, now that we can have animals in, maybe we'll have the zoo come in and give us a little demonstration with the bring us their more cuddly animals because we're part of the Capitol. Okay. As we have an event at the Capitol. Representative Vertel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd just like to say it's been a pleasure working with you through this process. Thank you for it. It's a hard job distributing $600 or so million. People think it's easy, you know, it'd be easy just to do. No, it's hard. And I think that as the third chair of this committee that Representative Kahn has discovered, it's not real easy either. We still have some questions and you know, some concerns about this bill. There are a lot of very good things in it. It has been very interesting to work on it. But you know, the changes in the decision-making process with the councils is still a concern. The recommendations of the council, both of them, I think, remains troubling to some of our members. And these things, through the process, one way or another, will still be addressed and perhaps rectified. But I'd just like to say that, again, thank you for putting the bill together, and there are a lot of good things in it.
Okay, and the one thing I would also is just that this is a new process in the legislature, and I certainly really appreciated having the two previous chairs of the Legacy Committee on this committee, Representative Murphy and Representative Erdahl, and along with all of the members, everyone has made good contributions in it. My suggestion to future leadership will be that instead of appointing someone who kind of likes all of these projects, find someone in the legislature in either caucus who's really mean and can't stand any of them. and then I think they'll have a much easier job, just instead of just feeling very sympathetic to everyone who comes before us, just sort of snarling at all of them and wishing that they'd go away. So we don't have to vote on that. So that's just my recommendation to future leadership. So I now renew my motion that House File 1183 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much for your leadership in this third round of chairs, and you have put a different perspective on it than Representative Erdahl or I did, and obviously we're all going forward with this bill that's before us, and we have a great journey left in this year because we've been very deliberative and considered so many different types of requests and made some changes for the better. And things don't have to be the same way as they were in the outcome with the Senate. And I wish us well, the committee, in the process of meeting with the senators and the conference committee. And I think that we have to pay close attention to what's going on so that we prevail. The House prevails. I would like to also thank you for the numbers of people that you have here tonight that are interested in and participating in the process. rather than just the outcome. You did a good job, and thank you very much.
Of course, and it's probably particularly true of me, of anyone else. As I said, I don't feel comfortable with even saying anything unless I have a piece of paper in front of me with it written on and a staff person next to me. So I want to really thank all of the staff involved in this, from Michael, Balzan, Krista, Helen, Brad, Janelle, Mary, and both of our caucus people who have contributed really, really well to this process. So, you know, we'll see what happens as we go on, but it was a pleasure working with everyone concerned with this. And as I said, we'll kind of continue probably with the addition of working papers to what we've done. So I renewed my motion. We made all those speeches before we took the vote, which is probably a mistake, but I'll renew my motion that House File 1183 be recommended to pass the Ways and Means as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion passes. Okay. Meeting adjourned. All right.